The Premier League have made the everyday fan think that a Burnley-West Ham match is more appealing than a Milan-Napoli.
Brain could win the Serie A.
They say that they're joking when they say that. They are dead serious.
Do you think Serie A will ever get back to that? To being the best league in the world?
I don't think it's possible. It's not on the pitch where we struggle because we're still as good as them. It's off the pitch, behind the scenes. I don't understand how people can still defend Allegri when it comes to Chiesa.
Who would you get as a coach if you were in charge of Juventus?
If Conte comes back, there'll be good things that happen. It will be 2 years and bust.
We're very similar.
I think my funniest interaction with a player has to be with Zlatan. Literally, I was sitting here in the benches, essentially, and Zlatan started doing calf stretches over the top of me. He said to me in English, "You know, you are very lucky. Not everyone gets to touch God." In the end now, Inter go out. We've seen the draw. Inter would have got Dortmund and been on that side of the draw.
And the clear path to the
Dortmund,
final.
That's a massively missed opportunity. You know, when Italy is in a tournament, anything's possible. But on paper, it's...
I'm not holding my breath.
Not much as possible.
Adriano, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So nice to have you.
Great to see you both.
Yeah, we see each other all around the world.
Of course.
The most random places of all time.
Now we're in Australia.
Kicking it up.
Yeah, that's it.
New York, Manhattan, best place in the world. I don't even know how to intro you because you work for so many different companies, networks, Milan, everybody. Who are you working for right now?
Yeah, that sums it up. A bit of everyone. No, at the moment, I'm working for basically seven different English language networks around the world, covering football and tennis grand slams, AC Milan, and then FIFA and UEFA do some events.
Real slacker, huh?
Yeah. It's been quiet the last 5 years. So been living in Milan 5 years and really loving it. And time's been a blur because of things that have happened in that time. But I mean, it's been a really enjoyable experience. And, you know, Milan's a great city.
Yeah. We live there. Mike, I've seen this guy pitch side or I've seen him at games. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know who you're working for today. And he just lists off like four different like companies. You're an actual beast. Like, I'm so inspired by the way that your work ethic and how you manage it. But literally, can you describe to people your rundown of a typical day for you?
Well, a typical day doesn't exist because every day is completely different. But a typical match day like that, let's say where I'm working for three or four broadcasters, firstly, UEFA think I'm crazy because they're like, you're the only one that does this, running up and down a pitch. But it's literally doing that. It's like liaising with my broadcasters, making sure that there's no crossover in terms of who needs me at what time. Mm-hmm. But in an hour or an hour and a half in the lead up to a match, it's like, you know, 7:30 p.m., you're with this network, left pitch, 7:45, right pitch, 8 p.m., right pitch, 8:15, left pitch, knowing what you say. If they come back to you, who did I say what to?
No way.
It does get a little confusing at times, but you need to stay on top of the game. And one thing I always do with everything I do, I just talk about what I know. I don't try being when I'm not. And in the end, it makes it as easy as possible to manage the different conversations with the different individuals that you're dealing with.
How do you know so much? You know tennis, football.
You consume.
All the different.
You consume. Even when I was in school, I was never someone who studied and crammed too hard. I was always someone who just read, who spoke, consumed, and I'd back my knowledge and what I had acquired over time to deliver on the day. So when I say I don't talk about anything I don't talk about, if I'm asked something that I'm not quite an expert in,
what do you say?
I'll turn it into what I am an expert in. Little tweaks.
Yes, and
I'll take it to something I want to talk about. So look, no, it's a thing of you are respectful of the industry you're in, but you control what you can control. And what that is on the day talking about what I can bring. Mm-hmm. And often, man, like I work with some big, big names who sit in studios who are famous, famous people. Arsene Wenger, most recently, he works with us at beIN Sports, one of my networks. Now, I cannot stand on a pitch anywhere around the world and tactically analyze football to Arsene Wenger. It's ridiculous. So I'll provide what Arsene Wenger can't see, and that's what's happening in the stands, what's happening on the pitch, what's happening in the city, and bring him closer to the action as opposed to try and tell him what he already knows. So that's how I play my cards normally, and so far, so good.
Not bad.
That's pretty good. I mean, me and Mark were talking about it before, too, and you were mentioning, too, with how many people you interviewed or have been with. Do you have any, like, funny little snippets or a little story that or just someone intimidating you didn't think you'd get nervous for in the past of someone you've been with?
I've been asked that before in terms of you get nervous when you speak or when you're around anyone. Yeah. To be honest, even if I'm sitting right now here with Messi and Ronaldo, nothing changes. I really admire these
guys. Is that a compliment to Mike and I?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Come on, it's got to change if you got Messi and Ronaldo
here. Which one am I?
You can debate. Yeah, you can discuss.
He said you guys can discuss on your own.
You guys can discuss. That, come on. That's not my favorite debate in the world, but let's say Messi, Ronaldo.
How's that possible?
No, because, look, it's something I've always had since I was even a teenager, very young. I was like, look, I really admire people, but I'm not in awe of them that I lose my way. It's just something I've always had. And I think that's certainly helped me. Done some really cool interviews with people where you've got limited time, you've got the pressures of the clubs who are keeping an eye on everything you say, but you keep it chill, you bring it to a normal place, and the players enjoy that. And as a result, I've been able to do some really captivating longer form interviews with these players and have built some really strong relations with players as a result. Now, I don't do my job to be friends with Victor Osimhen, but Osimhen and I have formed a very nice relationship over the last couple of seasons with the Napoli success, and it's really natural. And that's what it's all about. In terms of a funny story, I think my funniest interaction with a player has to be with Zlatan. Zlatan's a player I grew up loving. I think everyone loves Zlatan in their own way, shape or form. Zlatan, a player I always enjoyed. Started working at Milan. We covered a lot of Milan matches, particularly in the Scudetto winning season. And I remember sitting on the pitch side, 40 minutes to go, Sassuolo Milan. 40 minutes away from winning the Scudetto. Amazing feel in the stadium. And Zlatan got the call from Pioli, warm up, you're going on. And Zlatan was, literally, I was sitting here on the in the benches, essentially, and Zlatan started doing calf stretches over the top of me. And we exchange a couple of words in Italian. He knows I speak English. I pat him on the back, and then he was about to go in. And then he looked at me, and despite speaking Italian, said to me in English, you know, you are very lucky. Not everyone gets to touch God. And when he said this to me, I thought, in that moment, this player can still be that character. I love you, man. Go on and go score a goal. He went on and scored a goal. They caught it offside, which is a big shame. But
did he dedicate it to you or not?
Well, he was going to run to the corner where we were. But, you know, it's interactions like this, these unique interactions you get with these guys, which you know, sometimes you sit back and you think that's pretty cool. Not many people get to be in that position. But it's not why I do my work. I'm really passionate about the work. But I am really genuinely inspired by these athletes who are young people doing things at an amazing level.
But did you ever have one? Like for me, I've always been a similar way where I never put people on a pedestal. Sure. But then Alessandro Del Piero was like my God as a kid. And I remember we were doing our first interview. And when I was zoned in and we were doing the interview, I wasn't thinking about anything. Sure. Fully focused on the conversation, what we're talking about. But beforehand, you had that little bit of, I was also like 18 years old at the time.
It's amazing.
Who's one that you've never had that before? Like beforehand, you were thinking about it like, damn, I'm really going to speak to Djokovic or Messi.
You know why? Because a lot of the work I've done, it happens spur of the moment. You know how it is post-match, if you're doing interviews post-match, you don't know who you're going to get. You don't really have time to prepare.
You find like 5 minutes before, you're thinking about it.
And then someone scores and it changes the whole plan. You don't really know. So the longer form interviews I've had, you've normally had a lot of time for it to sink in that it hasn't been too troubling. I've had occasions where I've been hosting FIFA awards. The FIFA Best Awards Green Carpet Show was in Milan a few years ago, and we didn't know who was going to win. Well, we knew Messi was going to win. It was Messi, Van Dijk, and Ronaldo. I actually knew Messi was going to win, but you didn't know if we were going to get the interview. You didn't know how that was going to play out. And there's so much happening around you that you're just ready to go, and you don't overthink. I always think if anyone overthinks what they do, it's not going to maximize their potential of putting in a great performance. So that night in the lead up, we didn't know which cars were arriving at which time. So at 1 second, there was Sergio Ramos, there was Marcelo. Ronaldo didn't show up because he didn't win. There was Van Dijk, there was De Jong and De Ligt, who were young players at Ajax at the time. So you didn't know who you were going to get. You just get a call in the ear saying, wrap up your interview with Mourinho because Messi's on his way. So
You don't have time to think about it.
Yeah.
And it's probably better.
And working under that level of pressure takes the skill set, the work to another level because you have no time to think. You just need to execute.
It's a good way of looking at it. It's true. Like now that you say that, it reminds me of moments where I'm like, oh yeah, when you didn't have to think about it, when you were just living in the moment, it's the best time.
I always think even when you work on TV, if you're live, it's so much easier than being non-live.
Oh my gosh.
Because non-live, you're that little extra relaxed. When you're live, you got no choice.
You don't slip up.
Get it done.
Yeah, exactly.
And I apply that to my life. I really apply that to my life. But I'll give you one who I was not starstruck, but one who I was like, I really like this guy. It's very cool to interview because I'd never interviewed him. And it's the first time the player's ever been younger than me that this has happened. And it was Chiesa. Chiesa is definitely,
I know you love Chiesa.
Undoubtedly.
I could tell just by the way that you talk about him.
Good.
Because you talk about him the way that I talk about him.
Very cool. I love Chiesa.
Like a crush, right?
We can say that.
Wouldn't go that far. Mike, who are you thinking about?
I love the way Kiesa plays. I love the way he goes about it. I love his attitude and approach. And despite the difficulties that you'll bear with, that's another story. I just love his approach to the game. He's a bit old school, but he's very, very important player for Club and Country. And Chiesa interviewing, he was the first time I did that, was after Italy's last two qualifiers for the Euros against North Macedonia and then Ukraine in Germany. Both times I spoke to him, really, really thrilling interviews, and my respect for Chiesa grew. And there was a nice buzz about interviewing a player that I really admire. I admire them all, but I have a lot of respect for Federico Chiesa.
He speaks great English also, right?
He's a legend.
Better than us.
Yeah, for
better real. Than New Yorkers that speak English. No, for real. I think he went to like English school or something. Yeah. I watched it in the Amazon Prime documentary that he did. All right, so we want to hear more about you later.
Sure.
But you mentioned Chiesa. We had the Italy call-ups. Hmm. For me, I agree with you. He's still the only Italian guy that puts fear into defenders. He's the only guy that looks to go forward.
That's because you didn't say the thing. Foloruncio got called up.
I like Foloruncio.
He's another person that's going to have a draw a lot of fear in the defenders' eyes for sure.
Are you saying that as a joke?
No, I'm saying it for real. I think he's
I like him a lot.
That's serious.
I don't know if you're messing
I never
with
joke
him.
Around.
Because I've been bringing this guy up a lot.
Saying, sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, we nicknamed him Folorun Show. Like, he puts on a show.
That's very original. Mike came up with that nickname.
It's good.
I'm very proud of it.
So we literally spent in our studio in Brooklyn. Me, Mike, and my dad, sure. Gaetano. It was like maybe 9 p.m. for some reason after one of our podcasts. And we were watching highlights of Folorun Show for like 30 minutes. Just because we're so desperate for anybody on the Italian national team. And we were saying he needs to get called up. And he did get called up.
Yeah. We also looked at Orsolini highlights also.
I'm not a big Orsolini guy.
It wasn't even that convincing too.
They debate him a lot in Italy. They really, he's used to it.
Yeah, what do you think?
Look, I think there's quality. He was obviously, if you recall, earlier in his career, there were strong links to Juventus for a long time for Orsolini. As was the case, obviously, with Berardi, who obviously, unfortunately, will miss at the Euros. Orsolini, for me, has to play, especially now with the loss of...
As a starter?
He has to be part of the squad.
Okay.
I think he's going to be not a starter. I think this is a player who... Think back to the Euros 3 years ago. There were some players who performed in a manner that they need to overperform in order for a squad to win a tournament like that. For me, Orsolini is one of those players who, if he's at his best, he has some weapons that we just do not currently have. And I see, if you've seen the squad today and you've seen that list of attackers.
It's kind of sad.
That's not an attack that's winning the Euros. That's not an attack that's defending the crown. But if we can get some players like an Orsolini to go to that next level, you know, when Italy is in a tournament, anything's possible. But on paper, it's...
I'm not holding my breath.
Not much is possible, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about attackers in the subject. So we always have this conversation. Every time someone enters the studio... Who's your ideal striker? Not even other, but just a striker. Who are you playing?
Well, Scamacca. He got left off the list.
I mean, that's another.
Yo, he's got to be the most frustrating player.
He is.
Because he's got the talent. He's got it all.
And he doesn't even Gasperini says it too.
Sure. And he's been scoring a little of late. But no, Scamacca hasn't shown the mental side of it for me to be the answer. I read that Insigne wants to still be involved.
Oh, gosh.
Immobile quite clearly still wants to be involved. Chiesa is the player who I'm going to say is the one who has to be involved. But who else is there around? Raspadori is a player, again, I've formed a very good relationship with Raspadori in recent years, a player who has a lot of quality. But Chiesa, Raspadori, are we the Spain of 10 years ago?
No.
That we're not. we're absolutely not. So it's really hard to pinpoint, because unless something drastic changes in the next 3 months, we're definitely going to start with at least one of our attackers who... would have been nowhere near a starting place.
Berteghi's got to be the nine.
Berteghi's got to be the nine.
That's what I think. At this point, when I'm looking at the list...
Lorenzo Luca's there.
Lorenzo Luca's got one goal. The only thing about Spalletti's call-ups, because I love what Spalletti's brought to the Italian national team so far, the way that he's spoken, I would love your opinion on this too. The way Spalletti's talked to Italian-Americans or Italians abroad, me personally as an Italian-American, I've never heard any Italian national team coach talk about Italians living outside of Italy as a country and trying to unite them and trying to give that spark. And he gave, I remember he said one quote where he's like, we need to ignite that passion from them, because for them, their connection to Italy is through football. It's through the Italian national team. So I've loved all that aspect of it. And I think some of his call-ups are merit-based. Foloruncio is merit-based. Buongiorno. There's a few examples in there. But then there's others like Zaniolo that I'm scratching my head. Lorenzo Luca's got one goal.
Zaccagni
hasn't even been playing. What do you make of the call-ups overall?
Look, firstly, on the Spalletti, I love the appointment from the start. it's a team that needs that sort of leadership. And obviously what he was able to do at Napoli, it was, you know, that's iconic, that's historic, that's forever. I love the connection to the foreigners, the Italians abroad, because obviously being from Australia, it's very similar. My family, and this is something I'm really passionate about, my family moved to Australia where football was the thing that helped them adapt and connect to a new life where they didn't know how to speak the language, they didn't have a social life, they didn't have money, they didn't have any direction, but football was that key. And that's why even still, despite all of my work in the space, still so passionate about the Italian national team. It means so much more than sport. It's beyond that. It's life, it's values, it's morals, it's everything it brings. It's everything it means to be Italian in this case. So Spalletti to understand that, that's not something which is widely understood in Italy for Italians. They can at times look at us abroad and be like, they're foreigners. But
do you still get that?
Yeah.
Well, Even though you live in Milan?
Look, living in Milan for me as an individual, not so much. But as an Australian abroad who's Italian and identifies with being Italian, you do get that.
Yeah.
Just generically. But no, I think I'm more Milanese these days.
He's got his nose up in the air. That's funny. Where's your family even from?
From Sicily.
Okay, bravo. Okay. Where?
Messina.
You see? Look at this.
That's where your forefathers came from.
I don't know, apparently.
Hey, we're distant cousins.
Yeah, somewhere down the line. You're the one went to Australia, one went to America.
Well, you know, my surname Del Monte effectively means like of the mountains. So somewhere in the mountains in that region.
You guys were shepherds or something, right?
Probably. I guess so. I guess so. We've always been searching for that next thing.
That's so funny, though, that you guys, thousands of miles. Like, Australia is literally the complete opposite of the world. You guys are so foreign to me. I never meet any Australians, by the way. Right? I feel like you've never meet Australians.
I confuse you guys with Brits with
accent. Really? No, it's a little bit different.
For them, it's obviously different.
How do we sound to you?
Yeah, you sound like Americans. I can differentiate between.
He wants to walk out of here.
No.
But we have similar stories, though. Like what you just said, that connection, even though it's Australia.
Well, look, I think if my historical memory serves me well, of Italian migration, I think really post-World War I, a lot of Italians came to the US. It was really the post-World War II migrants from the South, Calabria and Sicily, that went to Australia. So our families are a lot, 50s, 60s, 70s, have sort of moved to Australia. So we still really have that connection, even more so in the fact that it's very fresh. You know, my parents' generation were back and forth. It's still very, very fresh.
It's like first or second generation. Yeah, these movements. That's
exactly. And
Italy's got both kind of here. Like there's some that are, they just got like a vowel at the end of their name. They know they're Italian, but then they don't know anything about being Italian.
Fresh off the boat that are first generation too.
That's happening a lot more.
Movements. Yeah.
My dad was like, I think the 80s, something like that.
Well, there you go. And look, it's obviously, you know, big population of Italian Americans here across the board. But irrespective, 100 years ago or 1 year ago, it's this football, it's the national team which still connects Italians unlike anything else. Why do you think every international tournament, every fan there is like, I want to listen to the Italian national anthem? Because, yes, it's the best anthem in the world for me, but also because it's sung with such passion, because it means so much more. And everyone can argue that Brazil and Germany, the other powerhouse nations, the same thing, but there's something extra special about Italy. And that's why even when we aren't the best on paper, when we're in a tournament, we can always win. And I'll still say that for this Euros upcoming, I'm not sure we'll win, but we're there. And if we get through the group, anything is possible.
Siamo pronti alla morte. Dai. If you don't know, if anyone that doesn't speak Italian, the lyrics literally say, we're ready to die. That's how pumped up it gets you. I listen to it sometimes. If I'm having a bad day, I swear to God, I listen to the Italian national anthem.
I love that, man.
And like, you want to run through a wall.
Yes, sir.
That's the thing on social media that always gets retweeted afterwards.
Oh, the passion.
The last 10 seconds of the national anthem, everyone gets 10,000 retweets.
That's like Bleacher Report. They start looking at it. It's like right there.
Exactly. They're getting ready for it.
All right, so you brought up the Euros and this Italian team. And while I agree with you that sometimes when we're caught out, we could become the best. But then when I look at this team and I look at the attack, I just don't see the guys that could put it together in a way. Like, we need guys like Federico Chiesa to really step up
on
this game.
Even though we're talking about Italy's problems and stuff, even with Immobile, who wasn't a big spark, Italy still somehow managed to win
like
the Euro.
Magic.
Which is, I think, all the stars aligned.
Yeah.
And
it
happened.
It can happen.
But you can't rely on that all the time, right?
No. But when we've won, it's happened.
Yes.
Like, when Italy have had deep runs in tournaments, it hasn't always been based on good form. What's Italy historic for doing in tournaments? Starting slowly, finishing strongly. So, no, I think more than ever, there's going to be a bit of magic required. But we've only spoken about the attack. Still defensively and in midfield, there's still a lot of quality. And look, at the end of the day, the best team in our league is Inter. there's going to be a core of that team, a core of the
5, 11, 6 guys, definitely.
Which are into players. Yeah. Now, that's got to mean something.
Yeah, it's true.
They get each other. They get how they play. Can they convert on the big stage? Time will tell.
And you talked about, you mentioned the quality in the defense. I think it's, there's a lot of quality, but there's one position in the defense that there's another question mark, that right back position. For you,
like
who's
right
the best
center back or right wing?
How do we play?
Right wing back or right, wing right back. Back, depending on the formation.
So right now it's like written as Di Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Who do you think for you? Who do you what's your strongest?
Bellanova also got called up.
Yeah,
he's one of the outside picks.
We're playing three central defense.
Well, that's what Spalletti's been talking about, 3-4-2-1.
So let's say on the flank, the person that's going to be running on the right flank.
Look, I like Di Lorenzo. I do like Di Lorenzo.
Are you friends with him?
Yeah, I like Di Lorenzo. Is it? Grande Giovanni. No, I like him.
Year, the Di Lorenzo, or last year's?
Last year, Di Lorenzo. No, but look, again, I think given where we are currently at, however he wants to shape, however he wants to line up, I think maximum amount of Inter Milan players will suit me very well. So if it's going to mean, if it's Darmian, I need to see how he wants to line. If we play 3-4-2-1 and we have Acerbi and Bastoni, Darmian and Di Marco.
I like that.
That's where I'm at. Now, if we play a 3-4, does Di Marco play on the left? Does a bit more of an advanced role? I think that's going to be the core, and then we build around that. Now, does Di Lorenzo in effectively a 5 defense, does he get exposed as much defensively with the support of the Inter trio in the back?
Yeah, we're not sure. Yeah.
We're not sure. But these two upcoming friendly matches in the United States are pivotal for Spalletti to decide how best to play. Mm-hmm. Two winnable matches in home stadiums, effectively. There'll be plenty of Italian-Americans supporting the national
team. There's going to be a crazy amount of Ecuadorians.
I love that.
Ecuadorians here. They're gonna.
No disrespect.
They might dominate.
That's cool.
Us.
That's cool.
We're gonna have fun at the tailgate.
We're gonna try.
We're gonna try.
There's gonna be a lot of yellow.
We have one little curva for
that's
sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Section 118.
Well, good. One away game, one home game. But look, Di Lorenzo, I do like as a player. Is Di Lorenzo the same level as last season? No. But I always come back to my favorite, Chiesa. Is Chiesa the same player in Italy as he is at Juventus now?
Completely different.
Completely different. Di Lorenzo coming back to Spalletti is potentially completely different.
Okay.
That's how I'm looking at it.
All right, that's the best argument I've heard for Di Lorenzo.
But he's looking out very optimistic.
But he's right, though. You do need a lot of things to go in place. Like, Pellegrini's written as one of the probables that he wants. Pellegrini needs to step up in the form that he's had under De Rossi rather than what he was doing under Jose Mourinho.
But to fight back on your point over there, Chiesa's doesn't play the same with Italy and Juventus because he's held back.
By who?
By Mr. Allegri.
You feel passionate about this too, I could tell.
I don't understand how people can still defend Allegri when it comes to Chiesa. This is a player who is world class. Yes, still recovering from the knee. This is a world class player, and he's being held back by a non-world class approach to the game. It's plain and simple. Exactly. If he can play 2 games in an Italy shirt and perform the way he did last November, take us to the Euros, then that capability, that quality is still there. The coach is preventing him from doing that. How people can make it an argument the other way, baffled out.
And that's why I'm not saying the post-coaches of Spalletti aren't telling Di Lorenzo, get exposed in the back when you go up for the counterattack. That's why there's a difference in that. Sure. I get what you're trying to say.
Sure.
But you're looking at it in the optimistic point of view.
Look, one thing, just to be clear on my role and the way that I work, I never call myself a journalist because I'm not. And the reason I always come very positively is because, look, I'm a presenter. I host events. I'm not too analytical when it comes to football. Also because, yes, I have formed really good relations with these individuals, and I'm always looking for the positive. And especially when it comes to Italy, I really want the positive. Now, I just said that after just saying what I said about Allegri, but...
But that's also being realistic
for
me.
Realistic.
We'll get your real answer after the podcast, basically, is what you're saying.
So Chiesa is one of those guys that Poppy Miller, our host on Serie A, says this to me all the time. She says, Chiesa is the guy that could do no wrong in your heart. Yeah. She's like, everybody's got that one player that no matter what, you'll stick up for him to the death. And I think it is because what he did in the Euros, it brought me the greatest joy that I've had. And I saw a player that stepped up to the plate. I love characters. Like, I used to really not like Ronaldo because he used to always score against the Italian teams when he was on Real Madrid and knock us out. But then when I witnessed him at Juventus, I witnessed greatness. Like the game against Atletico Madrid, he stepped up to the plate when it was the most important part. That's what Federico Chiesa did for me in the Euro. So I do defend him. And the Allegri conversation is funny because there's some debate online on like, who do you go forward with next year? It's so clear in my eyes that Allegri needs to be the one that Juventus move on from, not Federico Chiesa.
Well, when they talk Allegri or Chiesa, that's no debate. And if Juventus, I can definitely say if Juventus make the wrong decision there, that is a disaster.
Who do you think is who would you get as a coach if you were in charge of Juventus? If you were Giuntoli.
They've gone back too many times, back in time. How many times they've signed Morata? 4 times. How many times they've recalled players? But this is a team that need a spark. And there's only one manager I know who can bring a spark out of nothing. And it's probably not going to be the favorite manager for every Juventus fan. But if Conte comes back, there'll be good things that happen there. It will be 2 years and bust.
We're very similar.
There'll be things that will happen. Yeah,
it's a different Juve, though.
Adriano and I are the type of person that you end up going back to the same girl because you love them so much. Even if the relationship's toxic, for some reason you go back to them. I'm similar with Antonio Conte.
I'm happy to hear the opposing argument because there's definitely one to make, no doubt. But this is not a Juventus team that needs.
Mike's rolling his eyes.
No, I'm just saying,
he doesn't like what I'm brought to the table.
He hates when we bring up Conte to Juventus.
I don't hate Conte. It's just he done his time, and I don't think there's some things you shouldn't bring back because it's gonna ruin the reputation what he once built for Juve.
Well, that's he went to Inter and won a Scudetto. And he got his star pulled off at one point as well. Oh, wow. But then who else? Because obviously there is
Motta.
They're coming through.
A younger, it doesn't have to be Italian. A younger coach has those.
Juventus will always
get
an Italian coach.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I was gonna say a young Italian, but it doesn't matter.
Those
modern ideas, you know, a Paladino, like a De Zerbi kind of, a Motta kind of.
I'm not against Motta, Thiago Motta at all. Love what he's done, but another Inter player, ex-player. But again, it's a risk. I think with Conte, you know what you're going to get, and he understands the club. And this is a Juventus team who are not near the top of their game. Juventus have problems.
But that's why you guys brought Allegri in, because you knew we were going to get, and then you're
but
still
But he was fresh off winning a Scudetto with Milan at
the
time.
He did bring stability, I give him that, but his job is done now.
But he built
now.
On Conte's team. Allegri was good then.
But from
He's
that,
not for this Juventus.
He can't further this team any more than he has.
I agree. I think it's like as obvious as can be. I can't believe that people can't see that there hasn't been improvements.
But how much more is Conte going to do?
Conte is the best rebuilder of a team in Europe.
Correct. But then you bring in the next one to take it to the next
But as
level.
A European coach, he's proven that.
But Juventus are so far off.
They
like
can't
being
win champions.
You think so far?
I think they're.
I think Juve.
I think
Juve have amazing players.
Really?
You don't think so?
To compete in Europe.
No.
I don't think so.
A few pieces. I think they're ready to compete in Champions.
How many pieces?
4,
another
11.
No, six.
I wouldn't say half. No. 2-3.
I like the idea of. I love Conte, but I would love the idea of like a Thiago Motta who comes in, fresh ideas. Sure. I wouldn't go as far as De Zerbi. For me, De Zerbi teams, they're very open. They're beautiful to watch. Sure, sure. But I don't think at Juventus, who still love a more defensive type of approach, I think Thiago Motta balances the two. Because
would
his
Juventus
team,
fans care about Thiago Motta coming back? Or coming back to the top of the league with Juventus as opposed to Inter?
Nah. Everybody forgets. Same thing with Conte. There's so many fans that hate Conte right now. Juventus fans are like, he went to Inter. He's a traitor. The guy wins a couple matches. All of a sudden, he's going to be celebrating. He's going to be holding on to the fans, celebrating like a lunatic, and they're going to love him. Why don't we talk about Europe and the European games this weekend, since they just ended for us? Somehow, I made this joke to you. I don't know how. We just checked the numbers. Apparently, we have a 97% to still get 5 spots. Yet we lost 3 teams into the Champions League.
No one's reading the real rules into this. That's what I'm.
We get the same amount of points from Europa League and Conference League
and Champions League. That's,
thank God
that's
we're
crazy.
And also now the draw is with Roma and Milan. Apparently we get a bonus point,
guaranteed bonus.
Yo, Fiorentina's got to pick up more points before they patch this. It feels like a cheat code right now.
Something's going on, but it's working in our favor. And what I love about it is that in Italy we haven't taken the Europa League, UEFA Cup
seriously
for 15 years. We haven't. We just haven't. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Roma made the final last year, which was great. Should have won that, but doesn't matter. Now you have to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. Now there are points on the line. Now I've always been passionate about this because this is good for work. It's good for our exposure in the league. But Fiorentina winning in the Conference League benefits whoever finishes 5th in Serie A to go to the Champions League. So all of a sudden, maybe you don't love Fiorentina, but you need to support that team because it benefits everyone. And I like that. It brings more of a...
Unity.
Yeah, unity, sure. Connection to the league and to the competition. It's a cool spin on, obviously now the UEFA formats are changing. people have their own opinions, but it's a cool spin to say now we have a 97% chance we're going to have five next year and maybe six as well.
Yeah, six. Six. So we were joking that if Roma or Atalanta finish in sixth place and win Europa League, we get six spots. We don't even deserve six
spots.
Six spots is crazy. Yo, what's next? Who's going to be there? Torino, come on.
It's just crazy because there's no Italian teams in Champions League and somehow the numbers shot up from the other ones.
Yo, listen, let's go to Inter. Because that's the one that's fresh. That's the wound that hurts more. By the way, you're showing that you're Australian, and we're showing that we're American when we speak like this. Because in Italy, I have cousins in Italy that they can't stand.
Of course,
if you go for this team,
I thought you were gonna say the accents for a second.
Well, no, the accents that probably too, but they can't stand if because I get it. Like if you grew up in Milano and you're going to the cafe every day and you see your Milan friend and your Inter, you want to go against them, but. Being abroad, we have that same exact connection where for the good of the league, as we're always memed out on IFTV by that, because we like to support the Italian teams. Inter was the one that hurt the most against Atletico, especially considering the way that the first game went. You just knew it was going to come back and bite Inter for missing all those chances and only being 1-0 up. We spoke about it already, and we have our podcast to shoot. What'd you think about the game?
It's very disappointing. And for me, I think this is going to be reflected on just a massively missed opportunity. It was an Inter team. I covered the first leg. I was there pitch side at San Siro. And you're right, Marco. It was a match where they really could have ended the tie. It was a dominant performance. Inter have been just so free-flowing, scoring goals for fun. Coming into this one was the approach from Inzaghi. A step back, a little wrong. This wasn't the Inter that we've seen, that we've come to love and come to really admire and respect all season. And they got it wrong. In the end now, Inter go out. We've seen the draw. What happened? Atletico got Dortmund. Does that mean Inter would have got Dortmund and been on that side of the draw?
I need to sleep with that at night. When I woke up this morning and saw that, and the clear path to the final.
PSG, Barca, then there's another opportunity. Again, Real Madrid, Man City, Bayern on the same half of the draw. That's a massively missed opportunity. And I was very vocal in saying for the last month, this was an Inter team that really could go all the way. They'll wrap up the Scudetto in the next month. They're going to be able to relax, rest, focus. Inzaghi has this squad exactly where he wanted them. And now you're 15 months off another shot at a Champions League final. It just feels like a half step backwards given what's been such a progressive
season.
Where
do you think it did go wrong? Because you mentioned a couple things there. Different style of play, Inzaghi.
The approach for me, the approach, it just wasn't Inter at their free-flowing best.
Is that the calculation aspect? What do you think it is?
Potentially. It's Inzaghi looking at it with the lead, knowing obviously once the goal went in, it's 2-0, it's game over. But Inter, when they've gone ahead, they've kept going.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that. We didn't see Inter fight till the 90th minute, conceding that Depay goal late. It was just a different Inter. And I think that comes with experience. I think that comes with the... Again, we talk about Juventus not being ready. Juventus are nowhere near ready for that. Inter made the Champions League final last season, but obviously against very... With respect to Milan, to Benfica, and to the other teams
Porto,
that they played.
Right?
Porto, the other teams they played along the way. Atletico Madrid and Diego Simeone is another level in that competition. And they got found out. And so I just think in the end, it's the approach... They will win the Scudetto. They will get their second star. That has been debated in Italy. Is the second star enough for a successful season? And
it's gotta be.
It is. But that's a big,
it's disappointing. But at the end of the day, I think you mentioned one thing. I don't want to waste it with our thoughts on the game because we only have you for a limited amount of time and we're going to do our podcast about it. You mentioned experience. The experience showed from like Simeone, who's been in so many of these difficult moments. And then you put on players that have experience, you know, Depay, Correa, even Azpilicueta that's been in those tough moments. Inzaghi doesn't have that. And it's not to say that Inzaghi's not a good coach. He's a very good coach, but that comes. We've seen him evolve over his last 3 years. This is one of those aspects that we'll see evolve because the approach, they stopped playing. They completely stopped playing, and the substitutions, the fact that Inter had how many defenders for the last 45 minutes playing because the subs were the wrong ones with Di Marco, with Bastoni. Bisek was the only guy going forward at one point. It's this. I think it is enough. I think the second star is enough because it's not like Inter lost 4-0 to Atletico Madrid. You know, they went out on penalty kicks.
Yeah.
And if you look at the teams that have struggled, right? Like even Real Madrid struggled against RB Leipzig. What saved them? A guy like Mbappe. A guy like Vinicius. Or PSG, when they struggle, a guy like Mbappe comes in, like a world-class player. Inter doesn't have that.
No.
So our expectations are very high if we say that it's a failure of a season. I mean, just for going out of Champions
League.
And
credit to Inzaghi, though, because think about it. They've taken a massive step forward from last season. They signed well. Obviously, they've brought in some great players. And they've gone to another level. And they look the team to beat already again next season in Serie A. But this will be a good, good lesson for them when they go into the next edition of the
Mike's
Champions
been rolling his eyes. What yeah, didn't you agree with?
I just feel like I'm back and forth in terms of, like, I think this was more of a hiccup rather than anything. Yeah, I could see the second leg wasn't as good as the first. If Inter scored the chance they did in the first leg, it would have been a comfortable second leg. Inzaghi's amazing. Inter's amazing. They're going to go for the treble. Everything's looking good. But it's the chances that weren't taken. And I think Inter really did shoot themselves in the foot by not scoring those chances. And Simeone, yes, he's much more experienced in Europe. He's been to a Champions League final. Simeone's better at managing these Grinta games where it's fighting tooth and nail. He likes being that underdog team. That's what he thrives on. And that's when you put Atletico in that side, you're almost guaranteed to lose just because they're always in that situation. So yeah, you could say Inter didn't play good the second. Simone Inzaghi did bad with substitutions, bringing in defenders. You want to close out the game rather than killing off the game. And you could say it's going to be another year of learning, just like the previous years. Inzaghi just kept getting better and better and better. But to me, I think it was just an off night.
I agree. And I think it takes nothing away from what Inzaghi's done. But I think just to wrap that up, football, it's like life, right? You get your chances, you don't always take them. Exactly. But when the pressure comes, the experience, that's what you need to rely on. And ultimately, those that prevail will be those that have been there and done that. And Simeone and Atletico deservedly go through in the end, albeit fortunately because Inter missed some chances, but that's what it's all about. And that's why Simeone is one of the all-time greats. And I really hope for his sake he gets that Champions League at some point. And he and this Atletico team are, for me now, a real dark horse to go to the final. I think they can do it in that half of the draw.
Especially if they play the second game at home, it's just a different
anything
game.
Can happen.
It's so amazing to play the second.
I think the way the
home.
Draws come out, though, they've got both first legs at home.
Yeah.
Which is tough. But if they get Barca in the semi, they can absolutely do Barcelona.
Yeah. You never know. Interesting. If we're humble, though, I think that in Italy, we can't compete. Besides Inter, there's no one else that could compete for Champions League.
Not near.
I mean, the way that Napoli went out, you just see the quality difference between them and Barcelona. There's nothing to even argue. Lazio, yeah, they had their chances against Bayern Munich. There's the Immobile one, even in the first leg when they were up by a man. But Bayern Munich just has so much more quality than us. But we could compete in the Europa League, which we're showing that we can, right?
Same amount of coefficient points, so basically the same thing.
Hey, we like it. We love Europa League.
What do you feel about Roma, Milan, Atalanta, all three in the Europa League? How do you think it plays out? What do you think about their chances?
Exciting, and I love the fact that the Europa League, it feels like the Europa League quality and depth has gone to another level in recent years.
It's looking like Champions League light over there.
This is a real Champions League.
It seems like it.
Hey, but they were saying even the same thing last season. We had three teams, obviously, in the Champions League quarterfinals, but the Europa League was very, very cool final eight, very competitive. Obviously, Liverpool, you got Bayer Leverkusen, who are the story of the season, but I love this. Atalanta-Liverpool is going to be a lot of fun. Don't rule Atalanta out here. Anything is possible.
I think they could pull it off.
It's going to be tough.
Am I crazy?
Liverpool are going to be in the thick of this title race in England, which is really cool, really exciting. Atalanta, anything is possible with Gasperini. And Roma-Milan, look, we get a bonus point out of it, so we can't lose, which is great. But I think this will be a great head-to-head battle. Don't know who wins. It'll be a lot of fun. De Rossi doing wonderful things so far. We know Milan, they've had their issues. Probably, though, again, given the Champions League last season, maybe come in a slight favourites. But Roma, final in the Europa League last season, they'll be confident. It's going to be a tough, tough two-legged tie in my two favourite stages, my two favourite atmospheres in the game, which I'm looking forward to cover.
That's awesome.
You think we get a team in Europa League final, Mike?
Yeah, I think so.
Who?
I think Milan.
Milan?
Yeah.
Milan Leverkusen semi, you think?
That'd be
Leverkusen West Ham the other side,
because they want Milan Liverpool final. This is scripted.
They want the comeback, but in Europa League.
Well, the Premier League fans are only talking about Liverpool against Xabi Alonso.
You saw that tweet?
Of course, I saw that tweet.
Who didn't see that tweet?
It's like my algorithm is like Premier League fans talking only Premier League. Like, just feeds me and it stirs me up sometimes.
Do you have that in Australia too?
Yeah. Well, the Premier League,
just like that, it's only dominated by them.
It's crazy. Yes, is my answer. Yeah.
That by that much?
No, it's insane. Like, people, if you get asked, like, oh, who do you support? And you're like, well, to be honest, I don't even watch a Premier League game. They don't understand. It's like, yeah, but you work in, you know, you cover the best games in football. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but I don't do Premier League. Like it's just Premier League, what they've done so well. They've marketed their competition incredibly well. And when you know how, I can speak for Serie A, but I also work for broadcasters, I have La Liga and Bundesliga, Liga 1. When you know how far behind those leagues are in their foreign marketing, even though La Liga do okay, Bundesliga do well, we are miles behind that. So don't even worry about what's going on the pitch, because the Premier League have made the everyday fan, even in Australia, think that a Burnley-West Ham match is more appealing than a Milan-Napoli.
Brian could win the Serie A.
That's crazy. Yeah. Remember?
I do remember. I remember. And they say that they're joking when they say that. They are dead serious. They are dead serious. It's like it's the power of the marketing and what it has done, and credit to them, because they're the best in the world for me with the NBA. Mm. But it goes to a point where it negatively impacts every other league when that disrespect crosses the line. And I see that far too much in the industry.
There was somebody who said that Mbappe is not a world-class player unless he plays, because he hasn't played in the Premier League yet. It doesn't count yet.
No. If you look at the greatest...
I agree with that. That's for sure. If you didn't do it in the Premier League, it doesn't count.
We only did it in the World Cup. Later.
Yeah, the World Cup final. When I met Gianfranco Zola, it was funny because he was explaining his experience. And he was there, he's like, yeah, the players who were not as good, like everybody was just going to England and being able to play.
Mm. You know what the scary reality is now is that sometimes you see this debate online that it's just a cycle. Serie A was the best in the 90s and La Liga in the... And now the Premier League's got the money in it. But the cycle is different this time because the financial strength is unlike anything we've seen before. Yeah. Now, people will come at me and say, well, you know, there was 30 million, 20 million being thrown around for Italian players in the 90s, which is true. But the trajectory and where they are currently at. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, we have Bournemouth outbidding AC Milan for Nicolò Zaniolo when he was linked there. It is at a point now where championship clubs in the second division in England will have more wealth than our top flight clubs in Italy, Spain, France, and Germany. And it comes from what's happening on the pitch, it comes from performances in Europe, but it also comes from what's happening in my world, in the TV broadcast world, where the broadcasters are putting more time and energy and influence into low-level Premier League games over high-profile Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga games.
Wow.
And that's just snowballing. So the road back, even if we win every European trophy this year in Serie A, obviously we can't now, but even if we win European trophies, it's not going to change. It's only going to put a small dent in what's happening because they are a beast. They are a machine. And it's very, very concerning for me going forward. And that's why we've seen Super League and these things thrown out. I'm not for that, but they're like, what's our alternative if we don't all change immediately?
So do you think Serie A will ever get back to that, to being the best league in the world? In our lifetime.
I don't think it's possible.
Really?
I don't think it's possible. And I love the Serie A. It's the thing I'm most passionate about ever. It's why I do what I do. It's why I still pinch myself that I go to these stadiums and I work at these stadiums every week, San Siro, Olimpico, that I used to watch at 4 a.m. in Australia with my nonno growing up, miss school, go there, watch it. And now I'm working at these things and the passion, the culture, the fandom is the best. If you go to an English Premier League match, it's a spectacle. It's entertainment. You come to an Italian Serie A match, it is an experience. It is different. It is passionate. Go to a match in Germany, go to a match in Spain, the atmosphere is unreal. But we are not monetizing that. We are not utilizing our cultural, our lifestyle, our culture to take ourselves to that next level. And as a result, the Premier League brand, the entertainment side of that has just completely taken over. They monetize every aspect of their competition. And that's why they can afford to spend 60 million on a player from Brighton to move to Chelsea for the fifth time because they've got that money. Whereas if Milan, Roma, Juve, Inter spent that 60 million on that player and that player was a bust, that's a big step back.
Maldini lost his job from CTK, 35 million, and people lost their minds.
Chelsea have spent a billion. I saw their 11 roll out for the start of the season. I didn't know any of those players. Yeah. It's like,
insane.
That's the level that we're playing at now. So we are not at their level. And even if we continue to win, it's not on the pitch where we struggle because we're still as good as them. It's off the pitch, behind the scenes, behind closed doors where we...
If you were in charge, since you don't have enough jobs, what would you do to fix it?
We as Serie A need to connect to our audience. We need to connect to our fans around the world. We need to bring the game closer to the people. The way to do that is to obviously make it affordable, make it visible, and do what we're currently not doing. Serie A immediately, as of tomorrow, need to set up a La Liga TV style Serie A TV studio, whereby Serie A studio, as you guys do at CBS, is available for fans all around the world to fall in love with the sport, to appeal to new fans. If you only just play the matches as they do into every market in the world, how are you supposed to find new fans to support Milan, Napoli, Roma, Lazio, Juve, Inter? It's not going to happen. I work for all these different broadcasters around the world. And very often, Serie A and the companies that sell the rights sell them to the highest bidder without actually knowing what that bidder is going to do with the rights. That's not a smart way to do your business. I worked for a broadcaster in India who had the rights for 6 years. We did studio every week for 6 years. They did a great job, a great service. You know how many people live in India?
A billion?
1.3 billion people. They offered slightly less than a new network in India offered at the start of the last rights cycle. Serie A sold to that for 5 million more, 10 million more, whatever it was. That network did not have a platform for the first 6 months of the season. We're 2.5 years into the cycle now. That network have never done a studio, have never had a presence on the ground, have done absolutely nothing to connect with 1.3 billion Indian people.
That's crazy.
They love Serie A, but they've lost 3 years. So kids who are coming through, let's say in their teens, are they watching Serie A? No, because it doesn't exist. So they're watching more Premier League. So now, instead of supporting Milan, Napoli, Roma, they're supporting Chelsea and Crystal Palace and Burnley. And that's where we're at. And that's one market. And I work into all of them. Middle East, North Africa, Asia, Australia. Nothing is done to service the product. We have the best country in the world that offers everything. We have one of the best leagues in the world. We have more history than any league. We have 7-8 legitimate international brands. But nothing can be done because we are set in our ways and we are too scared to push the boundaries.
Good thing IFTV is available in India also. Make sure to subscribe, guys, down below.
We got a lot of fans out in India and they're very good people and they love their Serie A. So that is one example of why I say to you, if you give me the yes or no answer, can we ever get back in the mode that we're currently in? It's not possible.
I mean, Adriano, you talked a lot about the Premier League being the top in Australia. In terms of popularity, where would Serie A rank? Second, third?
Yeah, look, I'd say clear number two.
Oh, clear.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
Clear number two.
Honestly, over here, if we're realistic, two is really good for us. If we could take any market share from the Premier League at this point, I feel like we take it.
Yeah.
I feel like in, at least in New York, Serie A is battling with La Liga for second. Definitely. It's kind of on and off.
Definitely.
So when you said clear second, that's pretty good.
Different here, obviously, his strong Hispanic community, and it's a bit different. We don't have that so much in Australia. So Italian population in Australia is enormous. Mm-hmm. And again, Australia, 25, 26 million people, not the billion of India, but really Italian fanatic supporters. Mm-hmm. There's a big market there. Again, another market that we don't service as Serie A enough. Mm-hmm. We don't connect enough. So there's a lot of scope to grow. But yeah, clear number two, Premier League number one. And obviously that's not including Champions League internationals, domestic competitions. And again, well done to the Premier League because they have Australia and Asia and Africa and Middle East, they've just pushed that and marketed so well that kids growing up now, they would rather support the teams I mentioned over the historical teams in Italy because they otherwise just don't see them.
Yeah. You know what's wild? I did a speech at NYU the other week and they're creating a course on Calcio, which I thought was wild. And there was a bunch of kids there that were students at NYU and there's 18-year-old kids, 19-year-old kids. And I keep thinking about the Serie A fan that's older, but there was one kid from Hong Kong, one kid from India, another kid from somewhere else, whatever. And they're Serie A fans. They were like random teams. And I asked them how, and they're like, oh yeah, I love the jersey that Napoli released this time. I love Leao for the fashion that he has. So there's also those ways to connect with the younger fans, which maybe we don't understand. I mean, maybe I'll speak for ourselves with the fashion aspect of it on why they support younger players or whatever it is, but that's also their connection into Serie A.
But that's the thing. Italy has all of that. Whether you're into your fashion, whether you're into culture and lifestyle, whether you're into food, whether you're into history, art, architecture, don't worry about the football. The football's good. our stadiums need some work, but our football's good.
They need a lot of work.
A lot of work. Our football's good, but our it's the rest of what we have to offer, which we can utilize to draw in new fans.
We're our own worst enemy, though.
Yeah.
Always.
We always shoot ourselves in the foot.
Always.
You know, I don't know if you watch NBA. You cover
Love NBA.
Sports,
Love
okay.
NBA.
How do you have this much time?
Yeah. NBA is
you
my
have
sport.
More than 24 hours in a day?
He doesn't sleep, though. He told
in Milan, we have 27 hours a day. No, but
who's
no.
your team? NBA. This guy's big.
No, but let me tell you, with NBA, I'm like every young fan coming through, and I don't want football to come like this, but I like players, right?
Okay.
I like players. I spent a lot of time out in Miami, so I like Miami. LeBron was there at the time and that. Mm. But no, I got players. And I loved Curry when he came into the league, but he's too popular now, so he's not my favorite. But no, my favorite's Dame Lillard by a long way.
But I was going to say for the NBA part, but yeah, NBA is a global game nowadays. Yeah. And there's also a couple of Italians in that league. So it's, and a Greek, of course.
That's what he was waiting for.
No.
He wanted you to say, what's
Giannis? Giannis is not my favorite. Yeah, yeah. But he plays like cool with my guy. He plays with my guy.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, they're together now.
So
there
your guy's a teammate of it.
Exactly. So I was going to say the walk-in they do before the games, everyone's wearing like, you check out their outfits. So they take pictures and they post social media. They do outfit checks and a lot, and that goes around. Maybe they could do something like that. Said, yeah,
well, you know, Milan are always, the Milan players are always looking for
Off-White.
They're Off-White. They got their collaborations. Exactly. Look, they're trying to monetize and sponsor that. It's an avenue to bring in some money. So, yeah, it could come in. But I think the fact that can be used as a sponsorship to bring in some extra money and they're all dressed the same, I think it's a
something
semi-smart.
But
play.
I think I get what you're saying. Like highlight that. Like the guys that walk in.
For the individual players.
Yeah, no doubt.
What's weird is like, that's not what I love. I love just the football. Yeah. And I love stories around the football and the love of teams. Like I fell in love even with Salernitana when I went there. Yeah, and I'm watching, like I've supported Serie A my entire life. I love this league. And we're only focused on the winners and the losers, right? We're saying Inter might be a failure because they don't win the Champions League. And then I went to Salerno. And I saw this group of kids, maybe 22 years old, 6-7 of them. It was their first year that they went back into Serie A. And for 90 minutes plus, they were all jumping and jumping up and down, singing. They were losing the game. They didn't care. They were there to take part. And that sounds like loser talk. That sounds like, oh, come on. No. You know, you're going to get relegated. You might get saved, whatever it is. But they were so passionate just to be together. And in that moment, I was literally stuck there watching. It was the first time I understood, like, this means way more to them about their culture and pushing Salerno than it does about the team that's playing the football. Correct. I love those things, but at the same time, maybe we do need to be more open to say we could get younger fans through these new things. Like, there's some guys that do Fortnite skins and all this stuff. Like,
broaden the audience in any way. You know, there's so many facets that you can go about, not just one. You know,
who's your favorite player growing up?
Totti, Francesco Totti. And it's funny because Totti, if you remember, one of his most iconic moments for Italy was scoring a penalty in Kaiserslautern against Australia in the 2006 World Cup.
Oh, this one. Oh, that must have been controversy.
Yeah. That's that one there. So that was, that was kind of a cool, unique moment because it's like my idol eliminating my home country while I'm, you know, growing up watching this blue shirt my whole life.
And everybody said it wasn't a penalty.
Well, it clearly was a penalty. I can't tell you how many times I had this discussion with
your neighbors on this.
Oh, I have this discussion with my Australian friends so often. It's clearly a penalty. Like, Grosso knows what to do, but that's a penalty. Mm. Anyway, the funny thing is now, though, is that I'm also very good friends with a lot of the Australian players that played in that team because of my work and working with Australian broadcasts, which is extra cool because they're absolute legends. And, yeah.
They don't like that answer, I bet.
No, we haven't had this discussion, so hopefully they don't watch, but no.
Make sure we add them on the clip, Mike.
We'll tag them all.
Well, one of them I'm really close with is Mark Schwarzer, and Totti scored the penalty against Schwarzer as well. Tag him.
Always
but
Totti.
No, Totti was my absolute favorite growing up, and funnily enough, he is one of legitimately the only, I know a lot of the World Cup winning squad personally now from 06, but he's, I think, the only one that I've never done anything with.
Really?
And I haven't even tried it. I'm just letting it take care of itself. And
he's off the grid a little bit, huh?
He is
an agent.
He's a god. He just is off the grid. He does his own thing.
Good for him.
He dabbled in the director sort of stuff. Yeah, with Roma, but yeah, he's
like Baggio, kind of away from it.
Yeah,
Baggio. Yeah, Baggio's completely away. What is? Okay, maybe you can't answer this question. But did you ever have the dynamic where you didn't know if you were going to root for Italy or Australia?
No,
always.
No, always.
Always Italy.
No, always Italy. And it's, look, I can say this. I don't say this publicly in Australia because I just won't understand it. Yeah. But if I, you guys get it in the fact of I grew up watching this thing. I mentioned earlier the connection that this blue shirt meant for my family integrating into a new world. When I was 1, 2 years of age, I remember waking up at 4 a.m. as we have to do in Australia to watch this team play. Mm. All I knew, all I identified with was being Italian because of this sport. My family would watch every international tournament in the 90s and 2000s together. My cousins, even if they weren't into the sport, it was something we'd do.
An event.
It was an event. You would do it. And if we play 7 games at a tournament, we'd have 7 2 a.m., 4 a.m. starts. My nonna would wake up, she'd cook. It was amazing. So you'd look forward to this. So then when eventually, you know, in my teens, now all of a sudden Italy play Australia for the first time at a World Cup. Okay, but it's Italy's playing. This is, I'm waking up for them. Australia happened to be there. I wish them well, but it's a different support.
Not that well, right?
No, well, not that well, but
Italy to win the next 3 World Cups or Australia to win one? What would you say?
No, Italy.
Yeah.
Italy to win the next.
People don't get it, even for us. I mean, him with Greece and me with Italy. I mean, Giuseppe Rossi got killed for choosing the USA over Italy over USA.
And where do you put Tim Cahill on your list of greats?
Oh, I know Tim Cahill very well. Legend.
Oh, nice. Amazing.
Legend, top player, some of his highlights right up there with the very best. So, no, Cahill, certainly one of let's say, Asia's, where Australia is based in terms of the Confederation, one of Asia's greatest ever. And, yeah, obviously, easily one of Australia's best.
He played for the Rebels, so we met him in random events, too.
No, I've had a lot to do with Tim, and he's a legend. And, well, what a career he had in the end as well.
Okay, last question before we wrap up. Mm. Best moment ever covering a live sport.
Best moment ever. Best moment ever.
That you look back on, you're going to tell your kids, your grandkids, your family, whoever. Or if you were writing a book and you could only write one last thing down. Favorite moment. Napoli winning the Scudetto. I know you did. Italy in the Euros.
It has to be one of those because I've had so many different experiences of, you know, hosting UEFA and FIFA events where I'm like, what on earth am I doing here? I'm sharing a dressing room with like Karim Benzema, Carlo Ancelotti, and myself. I've been on the pitch when Napoli and Milan won the Scudetto in the technical area behind Kvaratskhelia, behind Ibrahimovic. What am I doing here? I've had so many of those like, what on earth is going on moments. Mm. But when I strip it all back, it's not about me. It's not about the job. It's more about the journey and where I started. And I think my whole journey and everything I do, I just take it day by day. But I think it came full circle in the Euros when we beat England at Wembley, because to have witnessed that, yes, work there, but to have been there pitch side with people I love, with a picture of my nonno who I mentioned that I used to wake up and miss school to watch culture with when I was young, who passed away in 2014. And I always carry a picture of him that my cousin drew with me. To be there in the stadium and watch that unfold in the way that we won so dramatically, penalties, away to England, they were talking about winning and we did it against all odds. It just sort of summed up my whole career. Damn. I come from Australia, like, I don't think I'm better than anyone with what I do. I take it day by day. I try my best. I love meeting people. I love chatting to you guys. But I've been fortunate. I know I've been fortunate. I have some amazing experiences. But for my whole sort of journey to come full circle, like everything I've ever done has totally been against the odds. Like I shouldn't be where I am. I shouldn't do what I've done. Not many people have ever helped me on my journey. Italy winning that and doing that there at Wembley was the most special moment of my life.
You're going to make us cry over here, man. What's going on? Where are the tissues?
Beautiful. Adriano, you're the man. Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate you.
And also, one last thing. What's up with, stop the crying for a little bit. What's up with Vegemite? You guys really eat that stuff?
They eat that stuff.
What is that?
They eat that stuff.
I don't know, man.
I'm Italian. No. It's not bad.
They eat that stuff.
It's not bad. Try it. I'm
going to look it up. I don't know if I want to.
Toast.
If I knew, I'll bring you some next time.
I'm good. Doesn't sound good.
Adriano,
thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Let us know next time when you go back to New York, since we're in Australia now, to meet up, right?
Anytime you want.